Everybody, I'll call this meeting of PFAC to order Thursday, October 11th. And we have some new faces at this little event that we normally don't have. Jan Grimes, who is sitting down here, is the Chief Deputy Auditor Controller. Am I right about that? Did I get that right? Of course, Suzanne Lester, who's now our new Finance Director, Public Finance Manager.
Interim.
And we have Frank Kim, who is also interim as the CFO. Where did he go? Was he here?
He's over there.
Okay, I'm sorry. You're hiding. So welcome, everybody. The first matter of business this morning is to approve the minutes of the May 10th, 2012 PFAC meeting. And I have just a brief question about that. Do we still have that service that records the minutes, or do we?
Yes.
We do?
Yes.
Okay. The only thing I'd like to add to it is we've had this discussion before, that since this is an advisory committee, more is better in minutes. And the brevity of, you know, making them brief is not really, I think, what we want. We'd like as much detail as possible in minutes going forward.
In the past, Colleen usually edits them and puts some important information in there, so that might come from Colleen.
Okay.
So I'm not sure how Susan's going to handle it.
Okay. Just a comment. Do we have any comments or changes or additions to the minutes from May 10th? If not, I'll ask for a motion for approval.
So moved.
So moved. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
No dissents. Okay. Duly noted. Mr. Kim abstains. Hello, Carl. Next on the agenda is the a status report of the well-publicized, long agonized over PFAC compensation. Ms. Lester, will you give us an update on that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. On September 11, 2012, the Orange County Board of Supervisors approved compensation for board-appointed PFAC members in the amount of $200 per meeting. Compensation shall be based on actual attendance and limited to a maximum of 12 meetings per year. The board also directed staff to amend the PFAC bylaws to include compensation. The bylaws were amended, and they should be in as part of your packet included. You'll find the amendment under Rule 17, Section G. The amendment is highlighted in yellow for your reference. Subsequent to the September 11th board meeting, I sent the public members of the committee an email with two attachments. One attachment contained a W-9 form you were requested to complete and return. So if you've brought those with you, I'll make sure Diane or myself to collect them before the end of the meeting. This form is required to be on file with the auditor controller so that a 1099 form can be generated and sent to you at the end of the calendar year to report the PFAC meeting compensation earned in the year. The second form was the county's mileage and expense form. That was sent to you for your information. This form will be used as the expense claim form that will be submitted to the auditor controller for each PFAC member in attendance after each meeting. Public finance staff will have completed the form in advance for your signature at each meeting. This form will also serve as documentation of your attendance. The auditor controller will then generate a check that will be sent to the mailing address you provide on the expense claim form. If there's any change in your address at any time, please let us know so we can send the checks to the right place. Since this is a status report item, there's no further action that needs to be taken, and I'm available if there are any questions on this item.
Okay. Any questions or any thoughts you'd like to add? Sherry? Go ahead, please.
I might just add, I don't know if all the W-9s have been completed. I could have my staff bring them over, and they could complete them here if anyone would like to. I'll go ahead and have my staff, because I sign the ones for the county. I'll have her blank, four blank over so they can get signed. And a question would be, is it possible to have electronic payment? Do we have ACH payment that we could consider at some point instead of having to mail a check? I don't know if that's something that could be done. That way you don't even have to worry about getting a check. And I know we're trying to do a little bit more electronic, and it would be something that maybe the clerk or the auditor controller could consider.
I would suggest that would be a good idea. And if whoever is in charge of that would give us information, we have to, so we could do it ACH, that would be fine with me. Fine with everybody, I'm sure.
Oh, great. My husband takes my paycheck. I was looking forward to my $200.
I know.
And you just took that, too.
Well, I must mean he reconciles the bank account in your family.
Yeah, he does.
Sure, we can coordinate that with the auditor controller.
That would be helpful. I just want to add one thing to that. One of the debates or the issues for this was that PFAC in recent months has had difficulty getting a quorum, and then of course we had a big turnover of members as well, and I argued that it made certainly the public finance manager's job more difficult and made the committee's job more difficult, and the $200 is not going to be a driving force for any particular member, but on the other hand it does impose a little bit of an obligation, I think, to participate. Also, and I was whispering in Supervisor Bates's ear recently about vacancies, and I urged her to walk down the hall and try to get our last seat filled. Mm-hmm. So that's we do need five members because it really makes it difficult, you know, getting a quorum. So I will pass that on, and it'll be in the minutes, and I'm hopefully some supervisor will read it. So if we can urge that, that would be helpful. Okay, the next item on the agenda is the approval of the financing team for the proposed Tustin Regional Park and Dana Point Harbor revitalization. We're going to be asked to approve the finance advisor as well as the underwriter for this. Ms. Lester, would you tell us about this?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members of the board, I would like to invite Richard Mendoza, Public Finance Staff Manager, to give the presentation.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Richard Mendoza with the County Executive Office Public Finance Division. Welcome to the new members, and thank you, Mr. Chairman, for spearheading the effort for the compensation. That was extremely valuable. It was an uphill climb for us, but we were glad to be successful with your leadership on that. The item three on your agenda packet pertains to a proposed selection of a financing team for the Tustin Regional Park conversion and the Dana Point Harbor revitalization projects. And I should say at the outset that this particular project, or at least our role as public finance staff in this particular project, is somewhat unique relative to prior projects, especially as it relates to the pace, the tendency for us to be much more reactive in other financings due primarily to key data that is required for financings that tends to be presented to us later on in the process. And in this particular instance, we have the luxury of getting the information that we need to begin to plan well in advance, due primarily to three things, I would say. Number one, the actual implementation of the projects that are being proposed are fairly far into the distant horizon. They're not immediate. They're not something that we're having to work under time constraints or pressure to get it done immediately. Number two, we have board authorization now to begin the planning process, the finance planning process. And then number three, we have sufficient information to actually begin to strategize about some financing options with the consultants. So whereas in prior projects, we as public finance staff feel like we have to turn on the afterburners and put them on full thrust to just keep pace with the financing, In this case, it's much more relaxed, and it gives us an ability to be able to reflect and plan accordingly. So with that backdrop, the first phase of this particular proposed project has been completed, which is the issuance of two requests for proposals, one for financial advisor, one for underwriter services, that was really designed to bring on board a financing team for your consideration today to help county staff in developing feasible financing options. We circulated a request, or actually two requests for proposals, to all of the financial advisor and underwriter firms that were previously approved by your committee and the Board of Supervisors back in 2010 and in 2011. We convened two separate evaluation panels, one for the FA firms, one for the underwriter firms, and asked and directed, actually instructed the panel members to consider four primary evaluative criteria in their reviews. First, the lease revenue bond experience of the firms in California in the past 3 years. Second, the experience in working with former military base conversions and harbor redevelopments. Third, the proposed financings and marketing plans of the various firms. And then finally, the proposed compensation. The FA review team, the financial advisor review team, met about 2 weeks ago, and they deliberated, discussed the various options, the firms that were available, and their proposals, and they unanimously recommended that KNN be considered as the financial advisor for the proposed projects. And at the same time, the underwriter panel also met and did their deliberations, and they too unanimously recommended that we have Wells Fargo as the underwriting firm for the proposed projects. So the plan or the recommendation for today from our perspective is that you consider approving the financing team if that would be the case, that we would move forward with making the same presentation to the Board of Supervisors. Thereafter, our plan would be to meet with the team as well as with county staff members from both Dana Point and Tustin Park to develop some multiple feasible financing options that we would in turn come back to you during the second phase to propose those options for you for consideration of approval and concept. So it would be at that point where we would actually pick up the usual procedure that we follow in most of our financings, the approval and concept. The staff recommendation then for today is that you consider approving both of these firms that were included in the agenda. And we have here today present county staff from both Dana Point Harbor and Tustin Park, as well as representatives from KNN, the recommended FA firm, and Wells Fargo, the recommended underwriter firm, to help address any questions that you might have about both of these projects. Any questions?
I'd like to start, please. These financings are they, is it possible, even the most optimistic of scenarios, that this would happen in 2013 and maybe not 14 or 15?
Actually, we probably should have somebody from both of the projects see if they can speak to that. Any way of accelerating? Mark Denny from the Tustin Park project. Any way of accelerating the project so that the financings could occur sooner rather than later?
Mr. Chairman, members, Mark Denny, I'm the director of Orange County Parks. Ideally, we'd like to go to the market in 2013 to secure the financing and be ready to begin the demolition process and ultimate construction process of the park. We are still going through a process with the Department of Navy and National Park Service for conveyance of the property, and the board has recently selected an architect engineering team to do the general development plan for the park itself. So we're moving on multiple tracks and want to get to the market as soon as we can.
So it's possible in 2013 this
sure.
could happen?
Absolutely.
Well, since we've got you here, can you give us a little general background about the Tustin facility? Who owns it? I thought the city of Tustin had something to ownership. What's it configured now? in terms of the county and the city and the school districts. I've heard all sorts of things about this property.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I did bring a couple of exhibits, and Diane's passing out a presentation that was made before the Board of Supervisors when it approved the concept plan and conceptual cost estimates. Let me show the exhibit that shows the ownership. My apologies. The area in the center is the park location. It's 84.5 acres in the center of what used to be the former Marine Corps Air Station Tustin.
Pardon me, is it on page 6 that I hear?
Yes. Okay. You have to get through a number of page 4s to get there, though. Right. There's 4 A, B, C, D, and E, F, G.
You don't get to hear until after we're more into page 6.
I got it.
Thank you.
About 1940s stuff?
Okay.
So the proposed regional park location is in the center or the heart of the former Marine Corps Air Station Tustin and does include Building 28, which was the North Blimp Hangar, one of the two blimp hangars that's at the site. The surrounding area has been conveyed or is in the process of conveyance to a variety of mostly public entities led by the City of Tustin, which was the local reuse authority for the base conversion. But adjacent directly to the park location to the west is a parcel that will be conveyed to the South Orange County Community College District. A parcel to the south is a parcel that was conveyed to the City of Tustin that is going through an economic development conveyance, meaning they're working with developers to, in that area, build commercial property. To the east, there'll be residential, a community park, and a high school. The high school will go to the Tustin Unified School District. And to the north is all existing residential that was developed through the economic development conveyance through the City of Tustin.
Well, tell me how the revenues and expenses work. This are we realizing some revenue from the sale of the residential to pay for the park, or how is this going to work?
We are not. I'm going to pass out one other document for you. In your staff report, it identifies the potential use of certain property taxes that are specific to the former Harbors, Beaches, and Parks District, now known as County Service Area 26. As a part of the county's bankruptcy plan of adjustment, the state legislature redirected certain funds from both County Service Area 26 and the Orange County Flood Control District. That redirection was to take place for a duration of 20 years. That is about to come to an end. The document in front of you identifies the payments made to date and the projected payments through fiscal 15-16. The proposal that we would like to work through the FA and underwriter on is to securitize that future revenue and pledge it against the bonds necessary to fund the construction of the park. Operations and maintenance will be included in the annual OC Parks budget once the facility's been developed.
Does anybody understand that?
No. In English, does that mean you're going to take the bankruptcy money and now propose it to be used for this project?
The money that is currently pledged to bankruptcy debt, the bankruptcy debt will be paid in 15-16, and the diversion, the state law diverting that money, and there's a copy of the state law on the flip side of the sheet I just handed you, that will end in fiscal 15-16, and so those revenues will return to OC Parks. Obviously, it will take more than that to build the park, so what we're proposing to do is to securitize that revenue, essentially borrow against it for the purpose of construction, and then go through a process of payback using that revenue.
May I try to repeat
what
you said to see if I understand it?
Absolutely.
So in 15-16, the bankruptcy debt will be satisfied.
Correct.
And what you're saying is you want the county to continue to pay the same amount of money into the parks fund?
No, this is parks money. And if you read the law that I've provided, The county has had a special district, a dependent special district, called the Harbors, Beaches, and Parks District. Board of Supervisors dissolved that district and created a successor agency, County Service Area 26. That successor agency receives a discrete portion of the property tax pursuant to the vote of the voters in 1933 when it originally established the district. And so that property tax continues on. Part of that property tax was diverted in 1995 to pay off bankruptcy debt. That diversion ends and the money comes back to the regional park system in fiscal 16-17. And so the proposal is to securitize that future new revenue back to parks for the purpose of constructing the park.
But if the park money, if the parks didn't get that money, what would happen to that portion of the property tax?
It would require an action of the state legislature to redirect that money somewhere else.
So it has to be directed somewhere. Is that what you're saying? And the parks
is correct? It does not currently, but if the legislature, for example, wanted to enact another ERAF shift, it could utilize that money. And it's the same for the flood control district.
I see. So that money, I'm not sure I follow that, but nevertheless, that money is what you're going to use to securitize the $70 million?
Correct.
That you want to sell in bonds to build the park?
Correct.
And if I may clarify, Mr. Chairman, it was an act of legislation that diverted those funds to pay for bankruptcy recovery.
I understand. Okay, I got that part.
Away from parks.
Away from parks, right.
So it's going back in. But other than that portion of the property tax, there's no revenue coming in to build this park from the sale of single-family houses or anything else?
No.
Unlikely.
We're receiving the land for free from the federal government.
Okay.
So the fee title will come no charge to the county, and then it's the cost of demolition and construction that will be the responsibility of the county.
And has the Navy cleaned up the site?
They are responsible for cleanup, and it will be an ongoing concern for a number of years.
Well, can we start before it's cleaned up?
Yes.
We can?
Yes.
All right, I won't get into that. All right. There's a lot of questions. Actually, this is for information only, but purposes only for PFAC. This is not part of our decision-making process today, but at any rate, let's go down the hallway and see who has any comments or questions about this. Carl, you want to start?
No.
Okay. Would you like to start? Shari, what's your view?
Sure. I had a couple questions. First, I wanted to thank staff for, again, putting together a comprehensive backup on the RFPs. They do a very good job, I think, of going through that process to make sure that it is competitive. I did talk with them to see if for next time we could perhaps put the total dollar amount of the fees on, which I think is an item they'll consider on that. But I do want to thank them for putting together the back work. And sorry, Mark, just as you sat down, I apologize. I probably have another question for you here. I'm so sorry. Thank you again to Tom for asking. I was curious about where the dollars were coming from. I do see them coming from the Senate bill. In looking through it, I have a quick question. As treasurer, I am required to send out the property tax bills, and it indicates that the county is supposed to display a specific notice on the bills regarding the county recovery imposing a state-mandated local program. I know most of the SB 90 mandated programs have gone, and I don't recall us doing anything on that. So is there something that, one, we should be doing currently on our tax bills that maybe is there and I've just missed?
I reread that this morning as well. And the way I read it was that your staff most likely included that language in the, it would have been the December 95 tax bill.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually going to follow up with your staff and see if that legal requirement was completed at that time. Because it doesn't, the way it's written, it's not clear that it's an ongoing legal requirement. and was probably just the first tax bill after that bill was signed.
Was putting it in. Thank you. And that's probably clear because, of course, at this point, it is after. So thank you very much, and thank you for really going through the process of where the revenues are coming for, because that was exactly my question is, you know, this is a new project. I understand that the supervisors have already approved, you know, the concept, and you presented to them, or they haven't approved, but they've gone through the concept. So it is these dedicated revenues that will be redirected. If the bonds were to be sold, you know, you're looking for perhaps construction to start 2013, and of course with low interest rates, the sooner financing can be secured with low interest rates, it certainly would be great. What would be, how would any principal and interest be covered in the interim before these dollars would become available to pay any debt service?
That's what we want to talk to the financing team about, whether or not some of that could be financed up front, or to what extent some of those bond payments will have to be made out of the OC Parks Fund and maybe reimbursed later.
Aha, so that's part of the financing.
There are different
options to
look at.
I would just say, I know that certainly you have current interest bonds and capital appreciation bonds. They have definitely been in the news a little bit. You're looking at something that's a very short term. It would be a two-year term, but this is where you would borrow funds today and you would not have any payments until basically that maturity. So in this case, it would be a two-year period, and so interest does accumulate fairly quickly because you're not paying down anything, but it's a very short term.
Yes.
Currently, a lot of the school districts, if you've read in the paper, have been doing 40-year cabs, and so you take $1 million, and by the time you get to 40 years, you're paying back $12 million. But again, I would assume that you're looking at this as a fairly short term, which the county does, I think, with some of our pension obligation bonds. We use that same approach where you pay it all at once and you don't pay any interest in the principal in the interim. So that would be part of the financing. And then what the costs that of what you would have there, you expect would be able to be still covered. The $10 million would certainly easily cover any, hopefully, principal and interest costs. I mean, over 7 years, it would cover certainly the principal plus you'd have interest. So at some point, once it's paid off, then you would have those revenues and you would have to redirect them again.
They would just go for ongoing operations, maintenance, and frankly, capital replacement for a system that has facilities that are more than 100 years old. So we will certainly have needs for those funds going forward. And you know, we did provide the cumulative number for you just to give you a sense of the impact the bankruptcy's had on the regional park system since bankruptcy. Right. These are all dollars that would have otherwise gone to all of the regional park facilities throughout the county, and that there are still a significant amount of capital replacement needs going forward.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mark. I very much appreciate your explaining. That's all my questions.
Mrs. Hughes?
Yes.
Well, I don't want to say I'm feeling old, but I think I was around when we voted these bonds in 20 years ago, and we thought it was never going to end.
Bankruptcy.
The 20 years went by real quickly. But here's my question with the craziness that has gone on in the last couple of years with the state taking our money and moving things around. And this is obviously a cache of money. Is there any possibility that the legislature could intervene and redirect these monies to a state purpose or another purpose?
Certainly it's possible prior to a financing. I think after it's been pledged to certain debt service, it becomes much more challenging.
So that's another reason we should do it quickly?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Mr. Redeker?
I know you probably have said this already, but just to be clear, you're going to be borrowing against money that's going to be starting in 2016?
Correct.
Want to make sure I grasp that. And this is money that was supposed to go to that fund but was redirected to because of the BK.
Correct.
Are you going to be leaving one of the hangars? Is that
yes.
The plan?
Yes. Inside that 85 acres is the North Blimp hangar, and the concept plan is to keep the hangar and restore it and reuse it, adaptively reuse it, essentially as a large special event venue.
Wonderful. Thank you. I have no other questions. Thank you.
Mr. Gamm?
I have no questions.
The I understand the necessity to select a financial advisor at this point, but is it prudent to pick your underwriter so far out in this deal? In other words, if this may happen next year, may happen the following year, I mean, do we need to pick an underwriter this early?
Well, certainly, you know, that's the committee and the board's discretion, but I think that staff thought it would be beneficial to have an underwriter as part of the team in developing a plan, a financing plan and structure.
The reason I bring that up is that we know how the investment bankers change and shift, and people move in and out of these companies, and who might be a good underwriter today might not be as good 6 months from now. That's why I bring it up. I just question whether we need to pick the underwriter. I know the financial advisor is important.
Mm-hmm. Well, we do have a representative from Wells Fargo, the selected underwriter.
Let's hear him. May we hear him, please? Well, we'll get to Dana Point. We've got
Scott
a whole new
Worsman.
Thing on Dana Point. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Introduce yourself, please.
Scott Worsman, Wells Fargo. I was born in Long Beach Community Hospital, and my two children were both born there, and I grew up in Huntington Beach, and I'm still here. So hopefully, no. Worked for B of A for 19 years and worked for Wells Fargo for over 3.5 years. So we're not intending to go anywhere. One of the things also about the parks we know is the uncertain timing, which you've asked questions of Mr. Denny there. One of the things that we brought through the RFP, and we've been talking with the county and the financial advisor, is we could do a line of credit for you as opposed to selling cabs or something like that. Just do a bank line of credit. We think it is prudent, of course, to have us on board. I would obviously say that because we can offer some of those solutions right now. So you can finance some of those things at under 1%, well under 1% on a line of credit, as opposed to going out for $50 million for 2 years on a cab or something like that. Just borrow incrementally on a line of credit. We're going to be there to support the county. We're not going anywhere. We're the county's bank. I don't know what else I can say.
Well, I don't know. Is that relevant?
Well, you're a very important customer of Wells Fargo, and it is our intent to be your underwriter for these bonds at the best interest rates possible. But we also want to offer those solutions that are going to be most cost efficient for the county. That doesn't mean selling bonds tomorrow. We definitely agree. There's a lot of uncertainty regarding the project timing, but there's a lot of bank products that we can bring to the county for these projects to make sure that they're done on a most cost-effective and efficient basis. So we think we are a valuable part of the underwriting team and that we should be named.
Well, I won't comment. Our treasurer here could comment better than that, Ben, I could on that. But I guess the question is that can the underwriter contribute important information in the formation and structuring of this deal, and I just bring it up. So,
I certainly think we can.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, sir.
Sure.
Okay. Today, our mission is to approve the selection of KNN as the public financial advisors on this project. Now, we're going to have a whole discussion about Dana Point, are we not? I'd like to.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Sure.
All right. So why don't we wait before we do this motion? Let's talk about Dana Point because it's the same financial advisors, right?
Yes, and we do have representative from Dana Point Harbor as well.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, hi, I'm Brad Gross from OC Dana Point Harbor. Your question about possibly...
pardon me. OC Dana Point Harbor, what does that mean? What agency is that?
OC Dana Point Harbor.
Is that part of Parks and...
No, we're an independent agency tasked with the revitalization of Dana Point Harbor. We were established in 2005 by the Board of Supervisors.
Okay, thank you.
The question about seeking the financing early, I'm really not equipped to answer that question. I can't tell you what our schedule looks like and what we expect to be going for bids. I guess the financial advisors would be better equipped to answer if we can look at some of that money early, but it doesn't look like we're going to be going for construction bids until mid-2014.
Right. And I've read in the papers about what the plan is, and I read there's some detail in here. Where are you in terms of getting through all of your approvals, the Coastal Commission and the EIR reports and so on. Where are you on
Certainly.
All that?
Certainly. Just 2 weeks ago, we were at the Planning Commission with our final SEIR for the marina rebuild. The EIR for the actual shops and restaurants was done years ago. We did get a unanimous decision from the Planning Commission recommending for the board to recommend certification for the final SEIR. The Coastal Commission process, we've been through all of that. We have our LCPA in hand.
LCPA.
The Local Coastal Program Amendment, we needed to do an amendment to the Local Coastal Program, which identified the shops and restaurants and the reconstruction of the marinas. That's all done and complete. Right now, we are in the preliminary schematic phase. We will be going for CDPs, coastal development permits, at the City of Dana Point in the next few months. That review of that through the city is extensive and it will take about a year. At that time, it will go to the Planning Commission for the city, but we're well down the road working with our architects and engineers. We were in March of this year, we entered into an agreement with our architects and engineers for a six-year project for them to do the planning, which we're well underway on that right now.
Isn't the City of Dana Point going to be contentious?
I don't anticipate the city being contentious. We do have some active members of the community that like to comment on our project. They've been involved.
That's an understatement.
They've been involved throughout, but what I can say is that our proponents outnumber the opposition, and we are progressing steadily down the path to have permits in hand for construction. I don't anticipate there being a lot of delays, but there is some appeal time in our schedule, just in case, and that appeal would go to the Coastal Commission. But I anticipate us making it through those processes relatively unscathed.
So you think it's appropriate to pick a financial advisor and an underwriter at this point?
Not my area of expertise, but I have to trust CEO's office, and if they're advising that, then I would have to agree with them.
Okay, all right. We should ask Mr. Mendoza that, shouldn't we? I could editorialize just a little bit about the Dana Point Marina. I live down there, and in Laguna Niguel, and that property down there is truly one of Orange County's better assets. It's a marvelous thing. The only problem with Dana Point Marina is it's impacted from overuse. It's so popular. It's such a wonderful spot. That if you live down there, you don't want to go down there on the weekends because you can't park. I mean, it's a wonderful facility, and all of us who live down there are really hoping that this thing gets through because it's a wonderful resource for Orange County. That's my editorial. All right, any questions about Dana Point before we go for a motion here, Carl, Mr. Groner?
No, I'm supportive.
Okay. No questions. Sorry. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. If I could ask Mr. Gross just to pop down on the Dana Point again, thank you very much for presenting on this. It certainly is going to help brighten up that area with the changes that you're making, and it looks like you're certainly on the road with the Coastal Commission. I haven't followed it nearly as closely as Chair Hammond on it. But a question on the debt service. Currently, of course, you have leases that I know we assist you in collecting. Those dollars are going either to pay the current maintenance or going into reserves. So the debt service that would come, do you have an idea of how much you would have to use on the bond to pay for it? And if all of the debt service would be paid for from the harbor revenues, or if there would be other revenues that would be required from the county on the payment of debt service?
Again, and I apologize, it's really not my area of expertise, mm-hmm. but I have been told and we do anticipate that the revenues will be sufficient to cover okay. the debt service.
Okay. And I don't, those would be probably, I don't know if they can be dedicated to like the property tax allocation. Those are, the park revenues may not be, but so.
No, actually there, it's a title and trust, so all revenues generated in the harbor must stay in the harbor.
Oh, they must.
Yes.
Okay. So it will have a little bit of an ability to dedicate them for this use then. I think those are my only questions. I agree on this one. Certainly, obviously, the other one has a stream that's coming up in 15 and, you know, looking at the financing. But I do think that bringing a bank on board with looking at other options, you mentioned you're going to start, I think, in mid-2014. So it does, and the Fed Fed is looking to not raise rates till 2015, so I do think that low rates will be there, but certainly it provides us some financing options if there are construction costs and other costs by bringing someone. In this case, we did happen to get a financial institution who can provide some of those, so I would be comfortable with approving both, but I do appreciate Chair Hammond's that, you know, if you're not going to do any of them for 3 years, it certainly wouldn't make sense. But I think in this case, there are some reasons to look at it since there will be some costs. So thank you again, Mr. Gross.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Mrs. Hughes?
I don't know if this is properly addressed to Mr. Mendoza or the treasurer, but I have some strong feelings about the state keeping their mitts off our money. I don't know if you've noticed that before, but does the establishment of the team early on help in avoiding people looking at this stream of funds and in this? Does it help us if we do this now instead of waiting till later?
That's part of the rationale. As you remember, they garnished our checks, so to speak, because they didn't, meaning the state did not have the confidence that they were certain that we were able. They just didn't have the confidence that we would be willing to continue to pay the debt service. So they pulled our checks momentarily, and that, of course, will sunset in a couple of years here, and then we would redirect. And as Mr. Denny said, the sooner we move forward with financing, the better the situation the county will be in to make sure that they don't put their sticky paws on it.
Well, is this a true statement for the benefit of my other members here, putting my lawyer hat back on, is that if we have these contractual obligations to these various individuals, when the state wants to redirect these funds, they have to consider the cost of those contractual obligations, right?
That is correct.
Cool.
That's a legal and term. I might just add, because we've really just gone through this from the county on the redevelopment agencies, and certainly I think that obviously getting the debt issued, and certainly I think Ms. Grimes can probably speak more clearly, but getting the debt issued certainly helps protect that stream of payments, but obviously every step that you take to did it. And Jan, is there anything you want to comment on?
Well, just I believe the majority of these funds are property tax revenue based, so that would not be so easy for the state to necessarily get their hands on, but that said, when you do have committed obligations, it does change the dynamics from the state's perspective.
Okay, anything else anybody would like to add to this?
One question, Chair Hammond. Could you speak to the costs that will be incurred prior to the financings that would intended to be reimbursed with the financing? What is the scope of the expenses prior to the financing from now until 2013 in the case of the Tustin base and 2014?
The consultants would be brought on board on a contingency that the financings would actually occur. So they're working on a good faith. So
I understand that about the underwriter and the FA, but in terms of the projects themselves,
what additional expenses? Again,
what expenses are being incurred that have that are meant to be reimbursed by the financings?
Yeah, we don't incur any expenses in public finance that would need to be reimbursed. Perhaps maybe either Harbor or Tustin has additional expenses that they would need to be reimbursed.
But the county itself,
no.
There are no costs at all that come out of the county.
That is correct.
KNN doesn't bill us anything until the issuing.
That is correct. That is correct.
That's your question, right?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I know Wells Fargo when you do that. Okay. So what we have here is I will ask for a motion to approve the selection of KNN as financial advisors and Wells Fargo as underwriter for the projects known as the Tustin Regional Park and the Dana Point Harbor Revitalization Projects, and I suspect we'll see much of these deals in the future coming at us. So if I may have a motion.
It'd be my pleasure.
Mrs. Hughes, and all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Nobody opposed. Okay, next item. We are approving in concept the issuance of taxable pension obligation bond to prepay the pension obligations for 2013 and 14, and we are picking the selection of the financing team, and it looks like the law firm too as well. and the underwriter as well. Didn't we just do this?
It certainly feels like it, Mr. Chairman.
Let me just ask a quick question before you explain all this. But when do we prepay again?
We prepay by January 15th of each year in order to take advantage of the discount offered.
Weren't we late this year, though? Didn't we do it in March or something?
That was 2 years ago.
Okay.
And we got something like 6.1. It was a prorated discount at that time.
Okay. All right. Okay. Would you please explain this deal?
Yes. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to invite Lewis McClure, Public Finance Staff, up to the podium.
Thanks, Suzanne. Yes, item four today is for the approval in concept, as Suzanne mentioned, and the selection of the finance team. As you already mentioned, in 2006, 2007, and then recently in 2011 and 12, we did take advantage of this prepayment option offered by OSERS, and we were able to pay for these prepayments through issuance of short-term pension obligation bonds, or POBs. The discount at OSERS is currently 7.75%, so we borrow money for cheaper, and then we make the difference in savings. It is a weird cycle. We issue in January, and then we let the interest accrue, as Sherry mentioned with the previous financing, until the July of the next year, and then we start paying principal and interest. So there is a little bit of that interest accrual that we were talking about earlier. The last four times that we had done these POBs, we sold them directly to the treasurer. However, last year we actually sold it in the open market, and there was a pretty favorable reception. We paid interest rates as low as 0.75 to 0.95%, depending on the maturity. We actually used five different fixed rate maturities, so the longer maturities were a little bit more expensive, but relatively speaking, the finance was pretty cheap for the county. Depending on market conditions, we want to do that again. We want to sell in the open market using multiple fixed rate maturities, but that'll depend on market conditions going forward, as long as they remain favorable. Let's see. In terms of the financing team, we do recommend Cannon and Oric for both financial advisor and bond counsel. They've been on the POBs for a long time now, and they're familiar with the documents. In fact, Oric was the one that drafted the original 2007 trust indenture that we still keep using to this day to do the new financings. And then for underwriter, we had yet another RFP that went out the door, and we did pretty much the same process, except for, of course, asking for harbor and park experience. We asked for pension obligation bond experience. And the outcome of that RFP was to select J.P. Morgan Securities LLC based on their recent California three-year pension obligation bond financing experience and also competitive compensation. They actually weren't the lowest, but they were pretty close to the lowest. And if you calculate out the savings that you would make if you went with the lowest firm, but if they don't get the same kind of interest rate out in the market, we end up, being penny wise and pound foolish. So experience is important in this market. So approval in concept today by PFAC will allow the financing to move forward. We'll further analyze the option, and if it's still viable, we'll continue to move forward. And as always, we'll come back to PFAC and the board for actual approval of the documents and the financing itself when the details are more defined. Unlike the project before, where we maybe have a little bit of breathing room, this project will hit the road running. If you approve it today, we'll go to the board Tuesday, and then we'll have to sharpen our pencils and go forward quickly. We have someone from Canon here and also someone from J.P. Morgan if you have any questions.
Are we current? Let's see. We're retiring. Are we current on retiring the 2011s?
Yes.
Principal interest is being paid on time.
Yeah, we made one. There's five different maturities. One was in August. We paid that one. The next one's, I think, November 1st. Mm-hmm. And, we'll pay that one on time.
So we're current?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
May I ask a question?
Sure.
What are the cost savings achieved by using the same groups year in and year out?
There's probably not a cost savings per se. It's more of efficiency, and again, the fact that this is kind of a compressed time frame, we actually need to have the money in our hand January 15th. And so their familiarity with the documents allows it to be efficient, and it's more of just kind of a efficient.
So there's no sense that the legal counsel or the financial consultant would come in with a lower cost for reproducing the exact same work year in and year out?
That's correct. It's, I don't want to say it's the exact same work because a lot of the disclosures and things change. We actually, when we do a deal like this to the public, we prepare an official statement, and that actually has to be completely redone. And then there's also a lot of state impact sections in that document, and so they have, you know, that's starting over from scratch each year.
So there's no, it's starting from scratch.
No, there are some efficiencies. No, there are some time savings with some of the documents.
Has there been any trend of savings over time?
Well,
what's been the trend of the expenses to the advisors and counsel over time? I understand the underwriter gets paid, and that's much more of a by execution. But I would think that the advisors are. There would be some efficiency in
thinking back when we first rolled out the program and did the, for instance, the 2007 court validation process, they did charge more for that. So now that we're kind of in maintenance mode in terms of using the same documents, they have actually scaled back. That's a good point. That reminds me that they did do that. They charge us, their scope of services charged us extra to go through the validation process, and so there are certain other processes that they followed to get the program off the ground. And now that they keep using the same documents, they don't charge us for those again. So actually, you're correct.
Carl, I'd add some hearsay to that. I have talked to friends of mine who are in major law firms that do a lot of municipal bond work, and I keep saying, why don't you apply to Orange County to do this work? And I've heard this three times from major law firms, and they all say we can't compete with ORIC. I mean, economically, that ORIC undercuts everybody, and ORIC seems to be the leader in the state, as I understand it, in this business. But more importantly, that they keep the competition out by really keeping their fees low. And you know, the Gibson Dunns and the Brian Caves, they won't even bid on this stuff because of that. They said they can't even come close. So. Well, that's hearsay.
That's very encouraging to hear, and perhaps maybe we could circulate a note to clarify this trend of cost savings, because perhaps ORIC can compete with themselves as much as they compete with other people that don't want to fight the incumbent. It might be interesting to see. It sounds like we're getting that benefit. We're getting a very competitive firm, and we're getting them to rationalize how they do it. So that.
Don't misunderstand me. Yeah. I'm not touting ORIC. I'm just saying that
sure,
that's
understood.
The fact that I've heard. So
it'd be great to see a note on that, but it sounds encouraging.
Okay. Any other comments? Sherry? Any other comments? Ms. Grimes? Ms. Hughes? We all set? Okay, I guess we're ready for a motion to approve in concept the taxable pension obligation bonds, which will prepay the county's 2013 and 14 pension obligations. We're also selecting a financing team, which is KNN as a financial advisor, ORIC Harrington and Sutcliffe as bond counsel, and JP Morgan as underwriter. You anticipate this coming to market in January, am I right about that?
Right.
Is that what I heard?
Correct.
Okay. Could we have a motion, please?
So motioned.
So motioned. Do we have a second?
Second.
And all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Anybody opposed? Nobody's opposed. Okay. For the 32nd time, we're going to hear about teeter bonds. Mr. McDonald is...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right.
I'd like to invite Paul McDonald, Managing Director of CM DeCrinis & Company, to the podium to give a presentation on funding the teeter plan. And I'd just like to upfront say that I have to make an apology that apparently Mr. McDonald sent me an updated version that I did not include in the packets, but it's included in the presentation that you'll see on the screen. I don't think there's major differences, but you know, my apologies to you and to Mr. McDonald.
Well, thank you, and it's a pleasure to be here for the first time. I'm sorry you folks had to sit through teeter 32 times.
Would you introduce yourself again, please?
Yes.
Once again.
Yes, for the record, my name is Paul McDonald. I am the managing director at CM DeCrinis. I've got 30 years of experience in the financial services industry, retired from Riverside County as a CFO, spent 10 years as the treasurer tax collector, served as president of the association, and am a honorary life member of the Treasurers Association.
Are you, what is your role with Orange County?
I am here simply to offer my services. We are on your approved list. We have yet to be so fortunate to work specifically on any of your financings.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I think part of the reason I'm here is because TEDR is one of my favorite topics. And the reason for that, I believe, is it crosses a number of lines of county operation. Let's see, we're going to go. We've got the outline there. It involves operations, finance, budgeting, and legal. And I'd also note that it is perhaps one of the least understood areas of county finance throughout the state. So you see the outline here. The outline was prepared based upon the direction that I got from staff, and hopefully this will address areas of concern to you as we go through. If you have questions, just jump right in. So the idea is to give you a broad overview, talk in detail about the legal structure, tax analysis, and so forth, and close up with considerations for you folks as you're looking at TEDR. You're going to be looking at TEDR every year for the foreseeable future. Okay, quick refresher. TEDR is the alternate plan of tax apportionment per the revenue code. Right now, about 40-something counties in the state are on TEDR. In simple terms, the county advances any uncollected taxes and to the participating agencies and takes the risk. Counties take a variety of funding approaches. There is no single approach that is uniform across the state. For most counties, being on TEDR has been a fantastic thing because, and as you'll see later, in my opinion, it is a license to print money. It's a very, very strong, solid revenue source.
Mr. McDonald, may I interrupt you for one moment just to remind the committee staff member, just let me know that if you touch your screen in front of you, you can see the presentation that's up on the screen.
I'll turn it on.
We're having technical difficulties. Mm-hmm.
You tap into that window.
There we go.
It pops up.
There we go.
Tap that little one there.
In
here?
The slide.
Pretty
cool.
Why my husband does the thing at home.
We're technologically impaired.
And to put it in perspective, I looked at your financials. I couldn't find how you were accounting for the revenue in your budget, but I'm going to guess this past year you had TEDR contribute maybe $25 million to your discretionary. A little bit less than that? Okay. But still significant. So the TEDR plan's been on the books for over 60 years, named after an auditor controller in Contra Costa County. The most significant change to TEDR came in the 1990s, associated with a major wave of realignment, and the law was changed to make it more attractive to counties to participate. They changed the requirement regarding the balance of the tax loss reserve fund, and they made it mandatory for schools to participate if the county adopted TEDR. And that significantly improved the economics of TEDR. The amount of the advance that you fund every year not only varies with your delinquency rate, it's going to vary with the size of the roll. As the size of the roll goes up and sometimes down or flat, keeping everything else constant, if you had significant growth in the roll, you'd see an increase in the advance and an increase in the program size and in revenue. And over the last 20 years, we've seen two major upturns in delinquency. During the 90s, we had defense cutbacks and a downturn in the housing market, resulting in inventory building up across the state. And of course, we've now seen significant change with the Great Recession. So risks of the TEATER plan. Yes.
Sure, yeah. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. McDonald. Thank you for being here. It's good to see you.
You too.
And the TEATER plan has been a very popular topic around a lot of the agencies this year who are looking to exit. And I know when Colleen Clark was here, I worked very closely with her because I was asked to do several presentations that included the TEATER plan. And now that I have the official version, this will help. But it seems to me there are only three options for someone to get out of the TEATER plan. So I don't know if, since you're an expert, it seemed to me some of the agencies wanted to get out of the program, and there were certain reasons where the board could discontinue the plan, and then they would be able to get out if delinquencies got to a certain. I don't know if you can expand on that. It's maybe something I might follow up with you, because I know certain agencies have contacted me over the last year because of the benefits of the county has by having the TEATER program, and they certainly lose those benefits when they are part of the TEATER program.
Yeah, from the county's perspective, you want everyone in. You want to make money by their participation. The participating agencies, if they're thinking correctly, would want to receive that revenue, and that's why they would want to get out. The way for them to exit is you simply don't include them in the advance going forward, but you still retain the right to collect the outstanding receivables to pay down their portion of the debt that you've incurred. So we can talk about that offline. So the risk of the plan that the county assumes has to do with whether or not you're going to collect the money. And we'll talk about the tax collector shortly. But generally speaking, that risk is very low, particularly for a county like the County of Orange, because most of the risk is associated with raw land. Improved properties will clear the market quickly if they ever get to the point of tax sale. Prior to that, the equity owners or parties of interest, lenders, are going to step up to protect their equity interest. If they don't, then fine, it'll go to the market and it'll clear, because the amount of taxes is relatively low relative to the value of the property. So, and you know, what we saw during the 90s is that it was the outlying counties such as Riverside, San Bernardino, and Kern who had large inventories that were comprised of raw land. But we were able to clear the market through aggressive tax sale activity.
Add Imperial to that too.
I'm sorry?
Add Imperial County to that.
Okay, Imperial would be a good one, although they didn't, the volume of property that they have for some reason for sale just wasn't that great. But yeah, and in the valley too. And that was part of the reason why we went to the internet. And internet tax sale became sort of the mode. In 1 year in Riverside, we had 8 tax sales. So, you know, the mechanism exists to clear the market. And then the last point to make, aside from the real estate risk, is that access to cash to funding the program is the other key factor. And there are counties who have exited the program because they couldn't figure out how to fund it on an ongoing basis. Tulare got out. And I know there were a couple of other Valley, Central Valley counties that were looking at getting out. And this is probably a good place to make the statement that we mentioned earlier that you would be looking at TEATER every year. TEATER is an ongoing program. It's a long-term program, even though it's financed on a short-term basis. This is an ongoing long-term program. So in looking at the program and looking at your funding, it's important to look long-term. Where are you going to get the money? Okay, so now we talk about the tax collection portion of things, and the tax collector, as the title says, does get her money. In Orange County, you have a very low delinquency rate, typically one of the lowest delinquency rates in the state. For the fiscal year just ended, you were at 1.74%, and I understand that you're projecting 1.54. It's sort of the height of the downturn. Recently, you got up to 4.11%, which is high for Orange County. Put that into perspective, this past year, Riverside was at a 2.65, which was an all-time low for Riverside. And I would note that even though the economy has improved somewhat, we've seen these delinquency rates fall because financial institutions are stepping in and making the payments, whereas before they didn't. And we saw the unemployment rate and the delinquency rate tracking one another. Now we've got a completely different set of economics, and the financial institutions have realized, one, that they're exposed to foreclosure, judicial foreclosure for Mellow Roos and other assessments. So they can't just wait the 5 years. And they've also realized that if they're at risk and if there is a foreclosure and they have to take the property back, they may as well advance the funds because their cost of funds is going to be 3 or 4% versus the 25% that your tax collector charges them, which brings us to the economics of the program. So I like to tell people TEETR is like being in the economics are similar to the credit card business, except that you have a lower cost of funds and you have about the best security you can get. So your gross return is in the neighborhood of 24-25%, depending on how long the receivable is outstanding. That includes the 1.5% per month penalty interest, the 10% late penalty. You have very little set aside for collectibles. Your cost of funding right now is about 1%, so you're netting 22-23%, and you've got a first lien position.
May I interrupt?
Yes, sir.
How did you get to 24%?
24 assumes number one, you got a 10%. You were one day late, and you walk into Sherry's office. You're done. 10% right there. And so whether it's one day late or 5 years late, they're paying the 10%. And then they're paying 1.5% per month. So that's 18% for a full year. So that's, if you look, make some assumptions about the average life of the receivable, that's how you get is
so
10 plus
you're
the 18.
Annualizing to get to right. The 24. You're saying
right. Annualizing and then backing
you're
down.
The average
right.
Hold is less than a year, but then
right.
You're annualizing the gross return.
Right. And it could be that that's the actual return, that your receivables are about a year old. You know, the average life of the receivables is a year old. I don't have the detail on yours to say for sure. Okay, funding approaches. So there are three basic approaches that are used across the state. There is the standalone method, which you folks use, that Riverside uses. San Luis Obispo, Sacramento, Santa Clara, and San Diego used to use before they collapsed their program. Mm-hmm. And they reverted to the TRAN model. The TRAN model is where you borrow the money for the advance at the beginning of the year, you repay that portion of the TRAN with whatever collections comes in, and then you carry the receivable. And most counties follow that model. And then the third type is the non-TRAN counties, where they're just putting cash in. And this is where for some smaller counties who don't have a big cash position, TEETR really can be a problem for them. So for those folks who've gone to a standalone program or thinking about a standalone program, yes, ma'am.
Just a quick question, Mr. McDonald. So on the TRAN, now you would have to qualify for the TRAN by having a negative cash flow for so many months. I think this last year, I believe, the County of Orange did not qualify for a TRAN because our cash flows were diverse enough. So in this case, most of these agencies are still able to qualify for a TRAN, and then they can add in the TEETR to that.
Right. Uh-huh. But if that was the approach they were taking, mm-hmm. and they didn't finance if they were financing through the TRAN and they did not do a TRAN that year, then they're going to have to scramble to come up with the cash. So, okay. So that's one of the reasons that you would go to a standalone program to preserve your cash and have these additional options just in case you didn't do a TRAN. Cost reduction is a significant factor, although the compressed yields that we're seeing right now take some of the juice out of it, but there still is a cost differential between your opportunity cost of cash right now. The pool is probably 35, 34, where are you?
We're still at 50.
Okay, you're at 50.
If you're dropping, going to be dropping quickly probably.
Right. And so if you could borrow all in tax exempt, there's a spread. When rates are higher, the differential between what the pool would earn and your borrowing cost is much more significant. There's also a factor on the revenue side that the TRAN approach captures the penalty and interest and uses that to pay down the TRAN and to reduce the receivable. And in essence, what you're doing is you're deferring revenue recognition. Otherwise, that penalty and interest would flow directly to the tax loss reserve fund and out into general revenue. And then last but not least, size of the program is a factor for a smaller county. You know, if they're looking at a $10 million program versus 100 plus, the cost of issuance.
Do any counties collaborate with each other to do these tier?
No. No. Well, you folks collaborated with me, actually, when I was at Riverside. I was on many conference calls with your team advising them on how to structure.
I'm talking about jointly issuing bonds, teeter bonds.
No. No. And the thing is, they're of the standalone issuance, there have only been three or four or so. I think Santa Clara is out in the market. Most of those have been secured by letters of credit. So you have a differential there in terms of what the cost would be. There's only one county that's done standalone unenhanced notes, and that's Riverside. It's like doing any. There are counties that have done pool trans, but it's only the smaller counties that really benefit, and you have problems with blending the credits. So if you're large, there's not a lot of economies of scale. Okay, so the legal structure, the notes are issued pursuant to a validation action. Your validation action was in May of 2008. That validated pledge puts the security on a par with your pension obligation debt. And you have the pledge of the tax receivables, creating a double barrel pledge, making security more attractive to creditors. So as a result of validation, you have an ongoing pledge of that taxes until they're collected. And the debt is an ongoing obligation of the general fund, which crosses the fiscal year, unlike your other short-term financing, such as a TRAN. And then I won't spend a whole lot of time on the tax analysis. The tax theory is similar to a TRAN in that there's this deficit. So the deficit for the as a result of the advance is looked at in isolation as opposed to in looking at the TRAN, all of the county's cash flows are reviewed. And we'll just skip through that. So financing structures used for the standalone counties. So one structure is a private placement sold to County Treasurer's Pool. And a number of counties have done that, including Riverside. San Luis Obispo does that. Sacramento does that. And theoretically, you could do a direct placement with a bank that would be similar to that. We've got the tax-exempt commercial paper program, which you folks have outstanding, which Riverside does until next week when we close on the new deal. And then the fixed rate unenhanced notes. And we sold notes last week, $142 million of teeter notes, one-year notes at an interest rate of 0.25.
Wow.
And those were rated MIG-1, F1+. And we had done notes previously, but they did not carry the double barrel pledge. So this is the first version of the Cadillac model. So program mechanics, I don't know that we need to spend a whole lot of time on it, but quickly run through. Last year, you carried, at the end, during 2010-11, you had $160 million of commercial paper outstanding. At the end of the year, you'd collected $103 million of prior year taxes. Those got paid down, so you had a residual of $57 million. And then there was an advance of $61 million. And if my math is correct, that brought you up to the $118 million that was outstanding for 2011-12. And then you're off and running. I've got a number of charts in the back. We won't go through those that show the flow of funds under different scenarios, where the money goes on tax sale and so forth. So getting close to wrapping up here, some considerations for you folks. So we've talked about it's an ongoing program. So you want to have confidence that whatever structure you use this particular year, next year, and in future years, you're going to have access to funding. You obviously want to make sure that it's low cost. Interest rate risk is a consideration. If you have credit enhancement, obviously you want to look at the terms closely. And given that it's a long program, I think it's important to take the broad view and recognize that whatever approach you're using now, that may not be the best approach to use 5 years from now. And it's a function of the size of the program, demands on staff to manage it, the market for bank credit enhancement, as well as the market the broader capital market and the market for tax-exempt securities. So in conclusion, the program provides you a very low cost of funds, and unlike other county financings, it does require some active management. And I think everyone gains if you have a higher level of transparency and raise the level of understanding within the entire county as well as outside the county. And with that, I can answer any questions, or we can all hit the freeway.
I can't remember. Did we get a letter of credit on our last one?
Yes. In 2011, we converted from a Dexia letter of credit to Wells Fargo.
Are we going to have to do a letter of credit this time, this go around?
Well, we currently have an active letter of credit that for a three-year term starting July 2011. So the current letter of credit will expire July 2014.
That deal that you mentioned that went out for 25 basis points, did that have a letter of credit?
No.
Who did that?
That's Riverside, and we have. The cost of funds is 25 basis points plus the allocated cost of issuance. No letter of credit, no remarketing, no dealer fee.
Why do we have to have a letter of credit?
Because you have the commercial paper program, which is what Riverside had too until we made the shift. Riverside's letter of credit.
Oh, excuse me, Riverside went to the trans method?
No.
Just tell me.
Riverside sold one-year rated notes unenhanced. And the reason that Riverside did that is because Riverside reached the end of its letter of credit term, which we put in place in 2007 at a cost of 16 basis points. So we were looking at a significant increase in cost. You folks are paying 60. You know, we caught the market out there at a great time. So You know, we did the math and figured, you know, we can probably sell this on our own at a lower all-in cost. And we had no choice, too. So we were right in the middle. We had to make a decision either to go for another credit and maybe pay more or go this route. And knock on wood, you know, it worked out pretty well.
So I guess that begs the question. So, when is our letter? You have 3 more years, you say, on our letter of credit?
We've got 2 more years on the current letter of credit.
So we'll face the same crossroads then?
At the expiration, yes. You'd have to make a decision. Do we rebid the letter of credit, or do we go another structure? Or you can get out early if you want.
So, and just to clarify, you know, there is an ongoing analysis of our current program and current funding options.
I'm sure there is. Questions for Mr. McDonald? Any questions? Anything, Matt? Sherry, go ahead.
I just have a quick question. I know S&P changed, the county had purchased, the treasurer had purchased the Teeter program, commercial paper, several years ago, and it now goes out to market. But S&P's changed where it has to be rated, and you can no longer do, you know, any direct investments. On the one that you had, is Riverside still? Are they still rated plan or no? And did they purchase any of the commercial program, or the not the commercial part, the fixed note without enhancements that you just sold?
The Riverside County pool is rated AAA.
So they are. So they still have the same.
With a variation on that by Fitch and Moody's.
Mm-hmm, right.
S&P is not welcome in their pool. The last purchase by the pool was in 2008.
Okay.
For a non-rated piece.
Uh-huh.
They have looked at buying rated pieces,
right,
since then, but they have not purchased.
Okay.
And that is a consideration because the rating agencies are tightening the screws.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Sherry, are you anticipating buying this next go-around? Is the Treasury considering buying?
You know, as treasurer, as Paul or Mr. McDonald certainly knows, you're a fiduciary not just for the county but also for all the school districts. So every investment you would look at, you have to look at separate from really being the county treasurer. And so we will certainly look at each of the issues that come out. I know we did certainly purchase some of the last ones that went on the open market between the 0.75 and the 0.95. Out there. It has to meet our criteria, which certainly when they go to the open market easily does. So if it's something that we feel is important for us as a credit, you know, we know the credit very well, but we go through the same credit review. And certainly if it meets our suitability of our investments, we would certainly purchase it.
Yeah, and not to make your position any more difficult, there is a difference between the POBs and the Teeter credit, because you are on both sides of the Teeter credit.
Right. And actually, you're right. I think we just bought the POBs. We did not buy the Teeter. You're right.
Right. But you still have to satisfy the outside parties. But the treasurer tax collector understands both the investment side and the tax collection side and has really inside knowledge and confidence that you're going to get that money.
Right.
Thank
you very much. We appreciate that. Thank you very much. Is there any comments from the public? Anything that anybody would like to add in the room? Any other comments from the members? If not, excuse me, go ahead.
I just have one. I was at a training session this last week, and I heard some interesting news, and I've got one of my staff looking at it because I don't remember if it affects the county or not. If we ended up doing some Build America bonds or some of those bonds that the federal government rebates, do we do any of those, or did we not do any?
I'm not aware that we did any.
Okay. So then it's not an issue because the federal government right now is scheduled to take a 7.6% haircut of any rebate that they were paying to anyone because they haven't got a balanced budget. And so it sets into certain cuts that just automatically go into effect on January 1st. And I couldn't remember if the county, many of the school districts that we certainly work with closely, did a lot of those bonds where instead of being tax exempt, you went taxable, and then the federal government gave you a rebate back on them. But it sounds like the county did not. So that was my only comment to make sure that we were looking at that. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions, any other thoughts? This meeting's adjourned.